You're listening to Pod 4 Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4, .com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com.
Folks love more than going downtown and slumming it with the poor. They pull up in their carriages and gawk at the students in the common just to watch them talk. Take Philip Schuyler, the man is loaded. Uh-oh, but little does he know that his daughters Peggy, Angelica, Eliza sneak into the city just to watch all the guys.
Work, work.
Angelica.
Work, work.
Eliza.
And Peggy.
Work, work. The Schuyler sisters.
Angelica.
Peggy.
Eliza.
Work.
Welcome, everyone, to Pod for Ham. The Incomparable's deep dive into the biggest musical of the decade and possibly the century, the way they keep going. I am your host for this episode. My name is Shannon Sutterth. I am a teacher and a podcaster for various fandoms. And to my right, we have Moises Chujan. Moises is the founder of ESN.FM, a podcast network where he hosts Electric Shadow and various other shows. He considers himself a retired music theater actor.
But just you wait, just you wait.
And has done some work on the Incomparable Radio Theater here and there. And our next person is Orly Nativ, a professional costume designer and Swiss Army nerd who is podcasting with us for the first time.
Podcasting with anyone for the first time.
Yeah, we're very glad to have you. And finally, we have Cecily Walker, a librarian and generalist geek from Vancouver, Canada. Her various fandoms include Doctor Who, Friday Night Lights, and a very outsized appreciation for Jesus Christ Superstar, the movie.
I had a conversation about it at dinner the other night, and it just didn't go well. I'm alone in my Jesus Christ Superstar fandom, apparently.
Are you saying there was no buzz, there was nothing happening?
There was no buzz, there was nothing happening.
What a shame.
And we are here to talk about this week's song, which is The Schuyler Sisters. Before we get into it, just a quick check. Where is everybody? Of course, we're all Hamilton fans, being that we wanted to be on these podcasts. But how did you guys come to find the show or find the soundtrack? And how much are you enjoying it? Moises?
My micro origin story as a music theater fan actually is very similar to Lin-Manuel Miranda's, where I grew up listening to these cast recordings. I have a beloved vinyl copy of the West Side Story cast recording that my mom put in front of me at an early age. And that is how I first experienced Hamilton. I didn't watch any of the video clips or anything like that, but I was aware of it as it was moving toward production because I became an instantaneous, massive, huge fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda's back when he was doing In the Heights, and was bringing something to Broadway that, not that there's anything wrong with Disney, not that there's anything wrong with, you know, the Universal Music Group or any of the other mega conglomerates that have really theme parked Broadway, as it were. But his voice is one that I was very interested in following. I followed him through just whatever he was working on at the time, whether it was a little bit that he contributed to this, that, or the other, you know, whether Bring It On the musical, whether anything else. So I was locked in. I was set. I was the equivalent of the Rent fan wearing the scarf for anything this guy put out.
Oh, so there's other fandoms that do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Orly?
I work in theater and live in the greatest city in the world. I had a friend at the time when it was at the greatest city in the world. And I had a friend at the time when it started down at the Public working at the box office. And she was raving and raving, and I just missed it, which I have continually regretted ever since. But as, you know, a theater person, as a musical theater person, just it took me a while to actually listen to the soundtrack, which I, of course, enjoy enormously because it sounded like something you really had to sit down and listen to and really focus on. And it just wasn't working for a while. So I finally had an upstate venture that as I was driving in the car, I was listening to it for the first time and it was blowing my mind, which might not have been great for driving. certainly in some spots, but certainly the payoff for the waiting was fantastic. So it's been really exciting watching Hamilton excitement grow and spread and move, not just through the city, but through the world. And kind of exciting watching this sort of new fervor for musical theater spread to people who might not be into it and discover that they are.
And Cecily?
I found out about it through, like I find out about most things through Twitter. And a friend of mine whose musical tastes I really, really trust was just raving about the Hamilton Broadway cast recording and how it was sort of doing his head in because he was not somebody who really ever appreciated musical theater. He considered himself more of a hip hop and R&B head. And so he was raving about it. And I was like, well, if Jason is raving about this, there must be something there. So I decided to just stream it one afternoon. I downloaded the liner notes the same day. And as I was listening to it, it just reminded me of one of my favorite things from my childhood. It was like Schoolhouse Rock, but on steroids. Ooh. And so all of the things that you can learn about history and all of the things that you can learn about just little intricacies of history that you can learn through this music, and but also set to music that I really recognize. And, you know, listening to it and saying, hey, that's Destiny's Child, or hey, that's so-and-so. That was just really, really exciting to me. So I pretty much haven't stopped listening to it since I first listened to it back in September. I started out listening to the whole thing, and then I was like, no, I don't want to listen to Act Two. And now I'm basically only listening to like Satisfied and Wait For It.
Okay. Yeah. And like you, Cecily, my first awareness of Hamilton happened through Twitter because friends of mine and previous fandoms that we'd made connections through, mainly the Harry Potter fandom of all things, started talking to each other about Hamilton this, Hamilton that. But what impression I was getting was that basically it was a chorus line of men in powdered wigs, you know, more 1776 than anything else.
1776 with a beat.
Yeah, and not even the beat. I wasn't even getting that impression from them at the time, just that they were excited about it and they were rabid about it. And I started hearing a little bit more here and there. And then over Christmas, when the soundtrack first went on deep discount on Google Play, Chip, my husband, picked it up. And he apparently was listening to it in the car. And a few days later, we were on the long road trip to the grandparents' house for Christmas. And he's like, okay, you have to listen to this. And we start listening. And I start bopping my head and I start nodding, you know, yeah, this is good. And, you know, he turns to me about four songs in and goes, you know, this is great, isn't it? And it's like, yeah. And like others, it's been on repeat ever since, to the point where my 14-year-old son is rolling his eyes at us, probably because mommy and daddy discovered it first.
I have honestly felt like the biggest crazy person on the planet in the years since that, the video from the Poetry Slam at the White House.
Yes.
I've been trying to tell my friends, even friends who are into music theater. I'm like, you have no idea. This is gonna upend everything. Everybody's going to be insane about this thing. And it feels good to be validated in a sense that I'm not crazy and that in fact, yes, people are going to be more interested in that than, you know, the latest adaptation of a movie, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's wonderful to, you know, to keep spreading it. You know, I've, you know, started talking to I teach at a high school, and I was doing videos as part of the classroom presentation, and my history happened to come up, and I've been playing the compilation soundtrack through YouTube at work. That's how I listen to it at work. And it comes up and a couple of kids are like, oh, yeah, Hamilton, our social studies teacher played that for us. So seeing teachers grab this with both hands and bring it into the classroom in order to make history interesting and captivating again for these kids is one of the things I love that this show is doing.
I was co-presenting a keynote back in October, and my co-presenter, I told her that she was not allowed to leave Vancouver without listening to Hamilton. And so whenever I would encounter her just in sort of like a downtime, I'd have my laptop out and I'd play like little snippets of it where she couldn't get away from me. So she had to listen to it. And eventually she went up to her hotel room later that night. She downloaded the soundtrack, and the next day I saw her, she's like, what have you done to me?
Yes.
I can't stop listening to it.
I feel like I hear the repetition of this story.
Until this cast recording, I didn't really use Amazon Music, even though I've got Amazon Prime and had all of this music that was just available on the service. And I found out that not only is the whole cast recording on there, but a bunch of the tracks actually have what they call x-ray lyrics, where it goes through karaoke style and it, you know, follow the light up text, on a bunch of the songs on here. You know, sadly, neither of the couple that this, this particular group of folks is going to be talking about.
Okay.
It's a great feature.
Yeah.
It's
that cool. Is helpful to know. Yeah. Okay, so let's get into our first track, the Schuyler Sisters. As we already mentioned, Destiny's Child. Some people are calling this the Destiny Child number of the show. I think it's a little more than that. I think there's some Broadway show tune with that wonderful rap interlude coming in from Angelica to liven things up. But this is a fairly pivotal number. It not only introduces the women as characters in the show, it introduces the musical themes and motifs that that go through with Angelica and Eliza all the way through the program. What is it, anything in particular about this number that, you know, captured you or hooked you the first time you listened to it or subsequently?
Well, I think there's something wonderful about those thematic leitmotifs and how they hinge a lot upon their names, mm-hmm. and that they repeat again, you know, Alexander has his and Angelica and Eliza.
And Peggy.
But what's great is seeing them through the show cycle and shift. And so when you see the seeds starting in here, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and they've got musically, and this is something I'm not as good about music as a lot of people. I left my piano behind when I was 11. But, you know, reading, for those of you who have not heard it like six times before in previous Pod for Hams, genius.com has some wonderful annotations to these lyrics all the way through, explaining a lot of things that you might not know or you might not know that you know. For example, when the sisters are introducing themselves and Angelica, Eliza, Peggy, there's actually a crescendo going up and back down. So musically, Eliza, the key female figure being Alexander's wife, is the peak of that triangle. Even that goes through the order of the sisters, the birth order, and I guess it's fair to say personality order, Angelica being sort of the strongest and the most forthright of the sisters.
One of the things that we sort of just briefly touched on earlier, just the existence of 1776, one mm-hmm. of the things that I like what we get in this song in particular, and extends to all of Hamilton really, is the more pronounced view of the female characters. As progressive as 1776 was for its time, there's a much more individual voice that's given to these three sisters in this song than is given to any of the two female characters in 1776 throughout the entirety of that show. And that in particular is something that, you know, beyond the gimmick that people like to point to, it's real easy to say, oh, it's the Destiny's Child number. Well, it is, and it isn't. It's that, and it's also maybe a little bit of Dreamgirls, and maybe a little bit of mm-hmm. a bunch of other things too. But the fact that we get so much texture with these three characters in one song, and it's not just confined to this one song, is something that, you know, like Orly was saying, makes this a really important beginning point for not just a narrative, but a triptych of narratives.
I think the thing that really grabbed me when I first heard it was just how clever and funny it was. You know, you have Angelica and Eliza, whose personalities are very strong, and then you have Peggy just sort of interjecting herself into the song and into the narrative, as if to say, you know, hey, don't forget about me. And as someone who is a baby sister and the youngest in the family, I related to that very much. But another thing that really grabbed me as I was listening to it, I don't know if you know the on Saturday Night Live, Kristen Wiig used to do this skit. It was sort of like an Andrew sister skit. And like there were the three sisters, and then there was Kristen Wiig, who had like the baby hands. And so when I would listen to, you know, the Schuyler Sisters, I would imagine Kristen Wiig with the baby hands saying, and Peggy. So that's what would pop into my mind when I would listen to it. And clearly the Destiny's Child, you know, the calling back to Destiny's Child, but even calling back to Diana Ross and the Supremes, mm-hmm. or any of the other Martha and the Vandellas, any of the really well-known girl groups that have come throughout rock and R&B music history, where, you know, inevitably there is one person who gets the focal point, one person who gets the spotlight, and the other two or other three are expected to just dim their lights a little bit.
They get pegged.
You know, you Yeah, they get pegged, exactly. So, you know, that was really, really attractive to me. But just the wordplay in the song, how clever the women were, how, you know, up until that point in listening to the cast recording, you know, one of the things that goes through the cast recording over and over and over again is about who gets to tell your story, who gets to tell your narrative. And we hadn't really heard anything from women before up until that point, except in the opening song,
right.
You know, that one brief bit in the opening song. But this was an opportunity for the women in the story whose voices have largely been, who are largely missing from the history, to get a chance to tell their story, to take control of their own narrative. And that was also really, really attractive to me.
Agreed.
And I think what's great is that we meet them in this moment before they meet Hamilton, before they're kind of contextualized. They're brought together first as themselves, as sisters, as a set. And then the world works on them.
Yeah, and it's apparently this was actually the, this song was written after Helpless and Satisfied. So that meant Miranda was structuring and adding songs and putting things together. And I forget exactly who it was that suggested to him that, you know, is there some way we can like introduce the women before we throw them into the plot? And that got Miranda thinking and eventually coming up with the Schuyler Sisters as that song. And I like how it not only it uses this as a vehicle for introducing the women in a very positive, very musically impactful way, not just the fact that it's kind of a showstopper number, but then you've got Renee Elise Goldsberry originating the role and just rapping wonderfully in the middle of it about Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson and all of that. But it also gives you some byplay. We have Burr sort of introducing the song with the opening and then, you know, making a move and Angelica's having none of it. She's like, I'm busy. Yeah, and takes the song right back. It's like, leave me alone. We're busy. We're trying to do
it. Not about you.
Exactly.
See you later, buddy.
So the fact that Miranda was able to pull, you know, fit this song in so seamlessly, it feels like, as an afterthought, is just, you know, a testament to the way he can craft things and the way he puts it all together.
One of the things that it does really nicely in the overall arc of the show, and part of what works so well across the whole show, is the perspective switching and the validation of different perspectives that, you know, as history rang on, you know, what this biography that the musical's based on did for a lot of people was recontextualize Hamilton's entire life for people, where he had there was a very narrow view historically about this guy generally. There were a lot of different aspects to him and the people around him and this this amazing time to be alive, as it were, that I like in particular that, you know, whatever order it was added to the show, that this number in particular undoes some of that erasure that has happened to so many of the founding mothers. And there's the one thing I will cite from genius.com is their mentioning Cokie Roberts' founding mother's book, which is really great. And one of the more interesting takes on these women who were really, truly vitally important, no matter, you know, whether you want to give more credit to the guys that were on the battlefield and commanding armies and that sort of thing or not. These women, in particular Eliza, as we get to later on in the show, have a vital role in preserving the history surrounding these events and what really happened, and giving it more than just the histories written by the victors sort of perspective. And moreover, it's written by the people who are on the winning side, who are in the positions of power to decide what gets highlighted and what gets underlined. The unerasure of these characters in particular and their importance to the overall narrative of the revolution itself beyond just Hamilton's life is something in particular that I like about this song.
Yeah, like you said, with the way it captures so many different things, the fact that the undercurrents are building, that the revolution is coming, and, you know, that showing all the different sides of that, you know, here's Peggy all, you know, but, you know, this is going to be horrible. This is going to be bad. People are going to get hurt and killed.
Daddy's going to get upset.
Yeah. Daddy's going to, you know, be upset. And, you know, Eliza's busy. Look at all of this. We are in the most exciting time of history right now. And we're here in the middle of it. It's happening, you know, here in Manhattan, in the greatest city in the world, which, of course, you know, Miranda had to get a little bit in for New York.
Hell yeah.
And and then Angelica, you know, looking at it in the long view, not just actions, but philosophy? How are we going to change people's minds as well as their physical status?
I think it's really great that, you know, the women are talking about revolution and they're talking about history, but, you know, they're also really excited about, there's some really choice honeys all out on the street walking around, you know, like, look at all of this great stuff. Look at the talent, you know? So, I mean, it's not as overt as a way as I'm saying it, but that's that there's an undercurrent of that.
Well, and they don't want no Burr. A Burr is a guy that can't get no love
from me. They don't want no Burr. Burr is a guy that can't get no love from me. So yeah, I mean, that part of it is also really exciting because, you know, I'm not necessarily a student of musical theater, even though I went to a performing arts high school. but it's really exciting to me to hear women being able to, you know, embrace that side of themselves, embrace that sexuality and sing about it in a flirtatious, you know, I'm young, I know I look good and you know I look good kind of a way, and acknowledge that, you know, yes, you want somebody with a really brilliant mind, but, you know, it wouldn't hurt, you know, if he's got, like, you know, a nice little six pack or something. So, you know, that was really, really exciting for me to hear. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I keep harping on it, but I really love how soundly Burr gets shut down.
I know.
that's a particular favorite character interaction bit that you don't get that kind of interaction with Burr in basically any other part of the show, and it's nice, particularly this early on.
I'm kind of biased. I have, of course, not seen the show yet. I think, you know, we're going to get to go this spring sometime, maybe. But the staging that I've seen has been one of the Ham for Ham productions. Have you all seen the Three Georges do the lip sync version?
I love it so much. And I love it so much. I want to start a petition for Andrew Rannells to be Peggy. Like, whenever Maria Cephas Jones decides to leave the show, I want him to be Peggy because he's so perfect at it.
Yes. But, you know, the way that they are able to convey some of what I'm assuming is some of the staging or some of the attitudes that the actors do within the show is just hilarious. Loving it, you know, loving the gender switching, loving how into it they get to do that little bit is highly, highly amusing. So for listeners, if you have not seen it yet, Ham for Ham, Three Georges, and pick the one that's 4 minutes and 10 seconds because that's got the best perspective. And yes, that's how bad I've seen multiple versions of it.
You want the multi-camera one. That's the one you want.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize there was a multi-cam one.
There's one with a drone. There's one with...
There's the Aunt Peggy cam that comes in after it's over.
It's such a strong opening for our female characters, musically, character-wise. And it's so singable. That's one of the things I love about it, that, you know, that Miranda's touching on all of these different musical styles, even as he focuses on the hip-hop and the rap. That makes it so unique and inspiring. But to have the harmonies every single time towards the end, just listening to the harmonies go like fireworks. And it's just amazing.
Their harmony in particular on We Hold These Truths to Be Self-Evident are just amazing, that how tight they are and how much you get the sense that they enjoy singing with one another. And you really hear that. And then there's all the vamping at the end. That's just spectacular. Yeah.
The joyful sound and just kind of feel to the number as a whole. That reminds me of something that's a particular nitpicking point. A lot of people like to say, oh, well, New York City wasn't really the greatest city in the world. If you think about it at the time, you know, this city and that city. And I respectfully disagree with the people who are really, really violently opposed to the notion that New York City was the greatest city in the world. I'm not talking about it from an objective standpoint. I'm talking about it from the subjective standpoint of the women who are singing this song. This is the greatest city in the world because to be alive in this place, in this time, with all of this stuff going on, that subjective experience to them makes it the absolute best city in the world. And it being kind of a... you know, whatever works best for you is the best thing in the world. But I don't know. I might be crazy. I might objectively be wrong. Yeah.
It's a place where so much is happening. You know, this kind of cauldron of thought and revolution and action. I have some of that again, because that's where things are being set. But I don't think it's unreasonable within the context of the show, both for condensing locations to a certain degree, to look at it that way. Also in the context where the show is Hamilton's story and so much is happening there, that to contextualize him and the Schuyler sisters and everyone else, well, that's where the story is happening, and this story is great, and therefore, because the story is happening here, it is the greatest city in the world.
And to just sort of think about it, in like a hip hop context, it's also it's a neat little bit of, it's not really sleight of hand, but it's a neat little bit of symmetry that, you know, they're talking about everything is happening in the greatest city in the world where, you know, hip hop was born in New York. So, you know, here's this musical that is deeply, deeply, deeply steeped in hip hop. And this particular song that calls back to a lot of early hip hop tracks, especially early hip hop tracks by women, where, you know, there would be sort of like, somebody might call it a diss track today, where there would be back and forth between men and women, or, you know, a guy would record a song about a woman and a woman would do like a response song. I'm thinking about like Roxanne Shanté and the real Roxanne to just let you know how old I really am. Okay. But, you know,
your tastes are timeless. I'll say that.
But it calls back to that. You know, there's a long history. I mean, even, you know, people like, you know, Queen Latifah has done tracks like this. Just about every female MC has done a track like this where some guy pushes up on her. And it's not just rebuffing him, but it's what Angelica does. She doesn't just rebuff him. She's like, I'm going to dress you down real quick. Let me show you how on point I really am. Mm-hmm. So I've been reading Common Sense by Thomas Paine, you know, and she like gives this laundry list of just how fierce and how flawless she is. And you notice he can't say anything. He doesn't say anything for the rest of the song because he's been so thoroughly upbraided by this woman. So, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, there's a great tradition of this happening in hip hop and that Miranda was actually able to bring this into the song in such a way that if you're somebody who has, you know, even a slight amount of attention to hip hop over the last 30 or 40 years, this would just jump out at you as like, it's like the real Roxanne or something like that. So
there's a little bit of DeBrat in here. There's a little bit of Latifah in here. There's a little bit of strong women's voices before people were giving it as much credit as it was deserving.
Yes.
We probably need to sort of head towards wrapping this up a little bit. But before we do, just out of curiosity, we've mentioned here and there wordplay and lyrics. Do you have a favorite in this particular song? Is there a line or a combination of lines that just sing to you? Sorry. Oh, that was bad. I'm sorry.
I think the thing that probably grabbed me the first, and if I remember correctly, when I heard it on Twitter, I think I just wrote bloop, where Aaron Burr is doing his bit, where, you know, he says, why are you slumming in the city in your fancy heels? You searching for an urchin who can give you ideas. And she goes, Burr, you disgust me. And that's my favorite part in the whole song. She's like, she doesn't need to say anything else. She's just like, you disgust me. I don't need to have anything else to do with you. And like I said, on Twitter, I just wrote bloop.
Yeah, I'm gonna piggyback that because not only, you know, her cutting him off at the knees, but then the wordplay of him turning it around. Ah, so you've disgust me.
Yeah.
Trying to say, you know, okay, you noticed me. You've been talking about
me. You're obsessed with me, really. That's what it is.
And disgust, the wordplay there. That's what really, that works for me so well.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for Looking for a Mind at Work, but then I'm a big West Wing fan.
Okay.
So that's definitely there. Mm-hmm.
I also like the work concept too. That's another one because, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people, if they're listening to the song they don't see the lyrics yet, they're thinking about W-E-R-K. The more current, you know, work it or that sort of thing instead of, and in Miranda was very consistent for the entire song. He spelled it W-O-R-K. Like, no, I mean, you know, work, people are working at this. They're thinking, they are pushing to try and build this nation of ours. So I'm amused by that as well.
Yeah. I've got a bit of a conflicted feeling about that. The whole discussion around the spelling of the word. I think that, you know, the spelling of it in the lyrics is one thing, but I think there's a duality of purpose and intent in there. You know, his choice of using the word is he can only spell it one way in the lyrics. But since there is so much duality at play in terms of the phrasing, in terms of the perspectives and so on, you know, my read of it is both the, you know, the we'll say the Urban Dictionary version, as well as the literal and explicit, version of it, used in the show. But that it's something that goes into so much of, like Cecily was saying, the hip hop origins of the show and the duality of the way that it's constructed, where on the one hand, yes, it is absolutely about the building of the nation, the founding of the nation, the Revolutionary War and all that. And it's also this very coded growth of the true common man narrative, with the origins of how instrumental New York was to the hip hop movement, to so much urban culture that's defined so much of what's distinctly American, that's represented by the cast that he put together.
So that will wrap up this episode of Pod for Ham with the Schuyler Sisters. We will actually be back in a few weeks to talk about another song, but the next one on the list is going to be Farmer Refuted on the next Pod for Ham. I'd like to thank this panel again, Moises Chulyan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and heed not the rebel.
Orlean Nateef, a pleasure.
Thank you.
And Cecily Walker, we're very glad to have you.
Thank you.
All right. And I am Shannon Sutterth, and we will see you next time on Pod for Ham.